Oh, hey there. I didn't see you guys sitting there. Welcome to MTG Potpourri. 2 weeks in a row, bam, helping you bring this show that is, I would honestly say 110% about Magic the Gathering most weeks.
120.
Goes around, you know, in the odometer. Goes around 110%. To bring you this Magic Fueled podcast, I have our Community Cup champion, Adam Siborski.
Well, spoilers! Spoilers! Come on!
It's already happened. You can't spoil something that was streamed live.
You're right.
Oh, yes, and the Pope kissed a baby and healed it, too.
Although, to be fair, yeah, the Pope kisses.
That's baby. Also a spoiler, because he's now will be a saint.
Fair enough.
He got his miracle down. And this person that was trying to interrupt me rudely is Conley.
I was successful, thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, he was hopping around on one leg, so it's pretty tough for him not to, to do anything gracefully right now.
I'm off the cane. But yes, I am here against my will.
So do you scoot around one of those like little scooters where you can put your one leg up and then you scoot around and target and get in my way?
Every single person, when the word cane is mentioned, they go directly to that question, and the answer is no, because I would literally just have my leg removed before I would toot one of those little things around.
I would break my own leg so I could use the scooter.
It's called a mobility device. It's quite fashionable in
mobility
the
devices, that's awesome. You could put stickers on. You could spoke your
own. The only mobility device I want are the little carts at Walmart. Or no leg. Just cut it off. I don't want to know one of those scooters where I have to be a dog. The dogs use those things. You've seen dogs with those. They don't have back legs, and they literally pull themselves around on wheels. That's what
It's like a little chariot that they ride around in. Yeah, I mean, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what it's like. It's a chariot for one leg. I don't want a chariot for one leg. Give me a prosthetic leg. Give me, like, a robotic leg or just nothing.
Conley, that would make you a cyborg. And last time I checked, cyborgs are fucking cool.
All right, there you go.
I think those things are pretty sweet. I don't know, Adam, for your either because you have those one of those little push bikes, you know, that don't have the pedals where it just has the wheels and they just scoot around Flintstone style.
No.
Oh, it's amazing how fast one of these kids can go on that. You need to get one. They'll get to like 25 miles an hour until they hit a fence.
All right. Thank you, Tom, for your insight.
Yeah.
What's this podcast about again?
Podcast about Magic, 110%.
Oh, that's right. 110%.
Just like in Bedazzled.
110%.
That Brendan Fraser gem. All right, guys. So we typically record on Wednesdays. Today's Thursday. It's going to shock people, I think, on Gathering Magic that when they see an MTG Potpourri 2 weeks in a row. That probably means they think we actually have quit and we're just starting to recycle old episodes at that point.
I mean, I've been seriously tempted because half the time I don't think anyone would notice.
They would know because either your butt had not been injured or has died. And you'll rot it off.
They never know.
You can play some.
Sorry, we will have Asswatch update, Asswatch 2015 update at the end of the show, along with Dance Watch 2015 for Conley.
I did not name it this. I refused to call it Dance.
I know you didn't. I did.
Well, Conley, I mean, like you said, you kind of invented your own dancing. Can't you like incorporate like a cane or crutches into it or something? Or the little wheelie, the mobility device?
To be fair, I did quite a few cane tricks in the last 10 days when I was using the cane. Because when you use it, you kind of get bored with it and you do stuff with it. So I was enjoying doing some cane tricks. But now that I'm fully mobile, or I'm not quite fully mobile, but I'm at least able to walk just fine.
You felt good enough to lift your leg up basically above your head.
Yeah. It only hurts if I do anything extreme. Like, I couldn't return to sport or full-on dance right now just because I would potentially re-injure it. Not that I can't necessarily reach in those areas. We'll talk about this later.
Why don't you work up so you could, like, start taping, like, small weights to your, like, your ankles? You know, and just start working, like, physical therapy, dance therapy.
Like old-fashioned martial arts training, weighted clothes, weighted bracers, and then you take it off, like, when it's time to fight the real master.
What is this podcast about again?
Physical therapy.
Oh, 110% physical therapy.
Yeah, 110% physical therapy. Alternative medicine. I don't believe in any of that Western crap. Not this podcast. All right, guys. So we are recording. It's Thursday. The pre-releases are coming up in just a couple of days. So we do have the full Battle for Zendikar spoiler list out there. So Conley's going to be very hedgy because his... Your new type of, I guess, it's not even a set review. It's reviewing the set by making cool decks.
Well, no, it's going to be a set review. Don't promise people crap for me, Tom. I'm
trying to make it cool.
No, it's going to be a set review. I'm just going to have, like, it's going to be more brew focused than limited or like just pure ratings. Like it's going to be like what kinds of things you could potentially do with a card.
So like, so as opposed to old set reviews, when you'd say like this, it's this many stars. This one would be like this card gets
so many, give it a star,
so many shits because this shit is shitty.
Yes, I'm going to give things shits.
You can use a little poop emoji. Wait, that's official.
Isn't the set shitty? You have no shits to give.
Well, hang on. Before we start calling
set... I love this set. That probably figures why everybody else hates it.
Descriptions. Did anyone else also call it a bad set? Is that a thing that happened?
Let me think. Was it Trump?
Trump wants to deport it out of the country.
Build a wall around Battle for Zendikar in his campaign.
Yeah, easiest no vote ever.
He wants to deport all of the Battle for Zendikar cards. Deport the Eldrazi.
He wants to take all non-full art basic lands and get them out of the country. So they're stealing the spots for full art land.
All right, well, if it wasn't Trump, who was it?
I haven't actually gotten to read the article, but for me to actually hear about a controversy means that there's a lot of people talking about it on Twitter.
Well, who made the controversy? Who wrote this article, Tom?
Paulo Vitor Damo da Rosa. Wonderful Hall of Famer.
And generally nice guy.
Yeah.
And as I've heard people, critiquing the article or just saying what they thought about it, he was being negative, but not, I guess, mean negative. He was being honest with a kind of review of the set.
Sure. He was being candid.
Candid. Okay. That's a good way to put it. So it wasn't going out of his way.
He certainly wrote the article very well and articulated his thoughts very well. And I think most people would agree his points are correct. But it is still controversial when you, as a Hall of Famer and very vocal and visible person in the community, write something that basically says you screwed up in these areas. Here's the checklist. Because that's effectively what it is. It's like, these things suck.
So let's set the stage a little bit. So the timing for this is basically like Friday. Finally, the full set's revealed. This is all the commons and uncommons that kind of fill out the set, kind of paint a picture of what's draftable, kind of what the synergies and themes, you know, linearly built into the set look like. Basically, you really don't have, you know, you've got a high-level look of, like, some of the top-tier cards and some of the things that, you know, are going to get pushed and constructed, but you don't have a real idea, a real holistic look at the set until you get that full spoiler and you can begin digesting it. So Friday, you know, morning, more or less, goes up. By Monday, this article was published. So we're talking a two-day turnaround to digest, you know, a very complex 265-card set. And so leading up throughout every preview season, you know, Reddit, MTG Salvation, all of the major Twitter, all the major discussion points, you'll have people that, you know, the attractors and the detractors, you know, the people that are like, this is cool, this is awesome, I can't wait, and then there's always the people that kind of talk against it, and they kind of argue at each other, because that's what the internet's great for. But typically, once the set's fully revealed, it's like, everybody kind of doubles down on, you know, like, let's evaluate these cards, and let's start using them, and you don't usually have this type of very quick, very fast, kind of a slam in the face kind of article, like, yeah, I looked at the whole set, still bad. And that was just kind of a very, kind of a big shock value. And so part of the issue was that somebody, it's not clear who or why or what happened or if it was an accident or a mistake, like, not, you know, let's not accuse anybody of anything, but like the article's date was originally, you know, the Monday, and then it became something that was earlier that made sure it wasn't on the front page of the website.
And bumped it off, fixed. Yeah,
and so it's just like, whether that was intentional or accidental, I don't want to get
won't,
into that
we won't
kind
know.
Of argument, but that really brought a lot of attention to it. So if the goal was to kind of take it away, the Streisand effect kind of hit it double hard, and it got reshared everywhere. So that's kind of why this article kind of blew up the way it did. Just the timing and kind of the shock value of it with respect to kind of the other content you usually get when the sets are revealed.
Yeah, because it's written well and articulated well, and comes from somebody who knows his shit, more or less. So now the game of the back and forth about the set, it's like really hard for the other side. Like, who wrote the rebuttal article? I think it was
that Luis? I thought it was the
no,
Travis Wu.
No, Travis Wu. And like,
oh, the
and
cards he was excited about. It was he said, "I'm excited for these cards."
Yeah, yeah.
It's clearly two different like they had very similar timelines. Like, Travis finally got the whole set, and he's, like, pumped, because that's how he is about everything, more or less.
Yeah, so you have this, like, positive review of things, but, like, it kind of pales in comparison to the negative that came right before it. And it's pretty hard for other people to bring up arguments against what Paulo said, because a lot of what he said is, like, either factual or very difficult to argue against, because it makes a lot of sense. But even if those things are true, people still like the cards in spite of that. And it becomes a lot harder to like a card when a pro has already said you shouldn't like this card because A, Y, B, et cetera.
So I guess from my side, outside of even the details of the article, even though Reddit, I often don't find much of any value in reading the comments there, people brought up some really interesting comments where, as I guess Magic becomes an art or more of its own, I guess, genre of competitive entertainment. I guess to me, they compared it to video game journalism. Is, you know, a lot of video game, you know, websites, magazines have no connection with the companies that make games. It's not like EA has the EA magazine that's, you know, reviewing games and talking about games. But almost, I'd say, vast majority of your Magic content that you read from a lot of pros, usually it's connected to a website that sells Magic cards. And a lot of people are really promoting things like Tolarian Community College, because this is one of the few, I guess, critical voices for what he reviews that is completely, I guess, self-funded or has no attachment to like a card store or so that it sells accessories for Magic or anything else like that. Like, do you guys feel it's important? Do you think that people are just going down the rabbit hole with their conspiracy theories and getting on the tinfoil hats and the black helicopters?
Like, this would be the opposite of that, right? You have one of the largest retailers of Magic putting out an article about why the set is bad. If anything, that works against their interests.
Well, no, but that's why that's why they very quickly buried it, because it's basically going to
hurt
sales.
That concerned with it, they would have never published it in the first place, and they certainly wouldn't have moved it back or whatever. Like, they had their chances for this to never see the light of day. And, you know, when it got huge response, maybe there was a panic. I don't know. Maybe it was somebody just literally changed the code in the HTML on accident and changed the date. Like, it could be as simple as that. I don't know. I don't run the website. So, like, that bit of controversy, I don't think it's a big deal. The article is very visible right now. You can go click on it. It's still on the front page of Channel Fireball. So, like, I think that the fact that they're willing to publish it at all means that they – you know, there's no way anybody reads that article and then goes out and buys more boosters than they would have. Like, you either are not, you're buying less boosters or you're unaffected. Those are basically your two options with that. So, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about corruption there. Like, there is some crossover. Yes, they're like these, they do sell Magic cards, but also, like, these are pro players who, while they're being paid by Channel Fireball, as somebody who writes articles, I can tell you, they don't sit over your shoulder and like edit every single negative thing or every single thing they don't agree with out. They will, if you make a huge, you know, mishap or something like that, of course your editor's job is to fix that, but they don't sit there and edit for your voice and your opinion on things. Unless it's super controversial, in which case they probably say, hey, we can't run this at all. They're not going to change it to something like the opposite of what you said or anything like that. Like, for the most part, Magic journalism has been more honest than typical journalism these days, just because the people writing it are, you know, 20-something-year-olds sitting at home in their office unrestrained for the most part. So you're actually getting, like, you know, people who don't even necessarily think about a filter because they have never really had to have that thing. So eventually we could get to a point where Magic's so big that, you know, censorship and covering up and whatnot is something we need to worry about, but I still think we're a ways off from that.
Okay. That was kind of interesting, the point I thought brought up. I was like, I have no idea.
Yeah, so kind of jumping off Conley's point, like, I, you know, I can't speak for this specific article because, like, I don't know Paulo's editing process, how the feedback loop goes with, like, their, you know, their editor, content manager. You know, I assume it's a great process because Paulo seems to, you know, in my opinion, gotten stronger and more consistent and clearer. And you know, it's my guess that, you know, English is a second language for Paulo at the root of it all. You know, I don't think he necessarily didn't learn Brazilian, you know, first. So, like, I'm always impressed by people that can write
Portuguese. The Brazilian, Brazil's a country. Right.
So I'm always impressed by people that have the ability to articulate really complex ideas in multiple languages. Like, I envy that. I like to do that too. But, you know, like, I run Gathering Magic. I get to work with people that want to share critical things and kind of do a critical analysis of something, you know, and I had a very good experience with Neil Talbot, who took a very critical look at Magic Online and basically made an argument that as long as, you know, kind of oversimplifying his article, I can share it later, but basically his point was on Magic Online, as long as you keep the price of a Magic Online pack equivalent to a paper pack and make the entire economy function around that pivot point, Magic Online's not going to be able to grow in the explosive ways that free-to-play mobile games, Hearthstone, kind of other very popular digital card games have become. And so we spent about a month working on it back and forth, and I really challenged him to clarify his ideas, make them come across clearer, clean up some of the transitions. You know, it was a longer process. And it was very conscious because I, you know, it wasn't that I necessarily agreed with all of Neil's points or think that he's correct, but I want to make sure that when, you know, it's very easy to do, you know, a simple critical analysis. I think that Reddit is famous for that kind of stuff. I think Reddit and other online communities as a whole generally wheel towards the negative. I mean, you just scroll down to the comment section of anything and it's just a blur of anger and arguments and rage, and it's very easy to kind of just jump off the handle and say something's bad because of XYZ. So taking the next step and going, well, here's why, and thinking about it critically is awesome. And so, like, I love those kind of articles, you know, and I wonder, like, if this had come out, you know, let's say, you know, today or tomorrow after maybe a couple iterative loops, and you kind of give people some time to digest the set, come to some of their own conclusions, and then you bring this really coherent, well thought out, critical look at the set. You know, I think the reception and the feeling for it might have been a little different. You know, it might have been just too fast and that's just,
and too furious.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess we're
done. Yeah, you gotta end the show right there. It only goes downhill from a Fast and Furious reference. And Fast and the Furious 8, the movie is in jeopardy. I don't know if you guys have read about this. They have a hard time finding a director, and Vin Diesel is
also... Of course
also,
they do, because the next one's going to be terrible. There's no way they recover the series from here.
That's what people said after 6, 5, everyone since the first.
Fast and the Furious 7 was legitimately good.
It was
legitimately good, and it was like the last movie of a beloved actor.
That may have bumped its box office to $1.5 billion.
It may have helped a little bit.
Of course. But there's no. It's hard to carry on a movie after you lose one of your main characters and the other one doesn't want to come back.
Well, Vin Diesel, he wasn't in, was it like, he was in the first one. Didn't he take a break to like 4?
No, it was 2. The Tokyo Drift, everyone was basically gone out of Tokyo Drift.
Well, it was just sort of that side story that they then, you know, expertly merged back into the main timeline.
They did.
All right, so... We talked a little bit about, I guess, a little
spoilers,
bit of
spoilers. Again.
Yeah. Ooh, ooh, yeah. Die hard with a vengeance. So we talked a little bit about the controversy where I feel like it's interesting. I feel like most of the negative comments or feelings about the set for Battle for Syndicar have come from kind of like maybe like Paulo and kind of like more your side, more the professional, you know, highly competitive player. Well, I'm curious to casual flavor people often don't write set reviews. So some of us that just plain old like Eldrazi's.
I assume the set is much more popular with people that like large creatures because that's what the set's kind of about. I think it's more when people start to break down the details that they start to dislike things. I think if you look at any one element of the set, you could be really excited. Like the lands have me really excited, not the dual lands specifically, but just like spell lands, man lands, like all the different like things. You like playing a 35 land deck is like something that you could very much do in the next, you know, year, and that's kind of cool. Hell, playing a 45 land deck with the new Seismic Assault is something you can do, and that's cool. I do like big creatures. There's some fun ones in there. You know, I think the limited format's going to be pretty interesting. Like, there's plenty of individual things that I do like about the set, and I'm sure there's plenty of individual things that Paul likes about the set. But, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, you can't necessarily critique it. I just think that Paulo's at least article came from very, very much one side. Like his only positive thing with Brett was right at the beginning when he was like, I'm not worried about the power level or whatever. And it wasn't even the most positive thing to say. It was basically about like, I'm washing my hands of this particular subject. But yeah, I don't know. I think that the set is average, I guess. I don't know. I'm not thrilled about the set. It's not my favorite set ever, but it's probably going to be fine.
And from your side, where obviously you interact with people who are also, you know, think of like Bruce Richard, who's obviously more on the, I guess, casual fun side. Have you had experience where you feel like people more on the casual side seem to be maybe have the exact opposite view of this set, where they're not necessarily looking at, like, I don't look at a set and look at the, I guess I'm not trying to figure out like design or cohesiveness. I just say like, I'm seeing one little Drazis that have ingest and I'm now pretty excited.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the best way to put it is there are lots of things that are exciting for lots of people. I think lands, and whether you're somebody that likes great looking basic lands, or you like dual lands, or you like lands that have unique abilities, because there's just a whole cycle of just like instants stapled on the lands. You know, it's great. But there's, I think there's a lot of apprehension kind of underlying about the set, because it's not easy to understand. So you look at something like Magic Origins, right? And it's like, okay, there's 10 different planes, 5 different characters. Like, it seems like it should be really difficult to kind of follow what's going on. But it's really not, because each of the 10 planes are kind of linear. You know, they're 2 planes in 1 color, basically, for each planeswalker, where they started and where they went first. They're characters that we're already familiar with, and we're not relearning who these people are. We're just getting to see, like, how they became to where we know them. And so all those stories were kind of more or less not known, but like we're familiar with. So it's really easy to kind of jump on board and see what's going on. You know, we get what's happening in the set. All of the mechanics and themes are pretty straightforward. You know, okay, cool. Blue and red, I pile these artifacts together. Oh, black and white, I just do enchantments, and it's super obvious what's happening. I don't get that feeling from Battle for Zendikar. One of the things that was really challenging about the Community Cup, to kind of fast forward to that a little bit, was we had to do a couple sealed rounds and a couple draft rounds with the set. And it's a very synergy driven set. There are a lot of little tiny cogs and pieces that when you assemble them to kind of together into a chain, it's awesome. You get like, oh, cool. I see what's going on here. These little scavenger things ingest these cards. And then like my big processors come in and just wreck shit when they show up, and it feels incredibly powerful. But if you're just looking at all the different pieces, or you're trying to look vertically, like, well, but look at all the white cards. Like, you don't even get any of the colorless devoid cards. Like, you're just missing that mechanic altogether. So, like, you look at white and you're like, oh, cool, I love playing white. And then, like, there's this whole other stuff happening in the set that you haven't even gotten a taste of. Like, it's not even there in your color. And I think that's a lot of kind of where the criticism's coming from, is that it just doesn't feel like it's easy to understand. And it's not to say it's good or bad because of that, but because it's something that's difficult to grapple with, it's very easy to see the things that are confusing and frustrating and don't seem to work right, or don't feel powerful, or don't feel cool, because they're relying on the 3 other pieces you're not pulling together yet unconsciously. I think that, after getting to draft it, we did a couple mock drafts on the kind of the beta client we were using, and you know, we had the real competitive draft. You know, I think I did a total of 5 or 6 drafts total, counting the ones for keeps there at the end of the cup, and I still don't feel comfortable with what I'm doing in the set. There's some very linear stuff at the surface, like allies, great, just jam all the allies together. But the good decks, the good ways the cards interact together, it's very subtle, and it kind of shocked me how cards that may look individually stronger don't actually work without the other pieces that you want for them. And that's kind of my biggest thing with the set is there's always, in any set you pick in Magic, the cool, big, splashy stuff that people like a bunch of the cool, there's a bunch of crazy designed commons that I get to play around with and kind of see what's up with for my cube, and a bunch of stuff for Commander, but looking at, like, you know, what excites me about Standard, I don't know, because I just don't, I'm just not understanding how it's all supposed to work together yet. It's just really, really daunting.
I know where else to go with that. I'm just excited for Eldrazi. I'm sorry.
You could ask about the land.
Tentacles.
Yeah, well, okay, and this is kind of more, I've seen some people talk about this on Facebook, and they're almost worried about newer players at, say, their Battle for Zendikar pre-releases is the Expedition lands. Can you guys maybe explain this. It seems like this was sort of a gimmick seems harsh, but sort of a potential sort of chase.
It's definitely a gimmick. I mean, the last Zendikar had a gimmick too, right? It was buried treasures, yeah, which we can't talk about. WotC will not answer any questions regarding that. But
this, still now?
They are not allowed to admit, they're not allowed, they will not talk about buried treasures.
Really? That's
correct. I'm pretty sure
dumb and weird.
They're not allowed to.
If only I had somebody in this podcast that had been like in their headquarters. Oh, that could have, you know.
Multiple of us have been there.
Yeah. I mean, that could literally...
So the Zendikar Expedition...
Anyway, these are
the same pictures.
Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, so it's pretty straightforward. So basically, they took cycles of lands, including the most recent new dual lands that are being printed in Battle for Zendikar, and made, you know, basically extended art, premium foil, English-only versions of.
So these include the Shocklands, all 10 fetch lands, and the 5 new lands. That's it, right? 25?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, the 5.
But fetches. That's
all 10 fetches, yeah. All 10 shocklands, and then 5.
And so the rules for these are pretty straightforward. Because they're all lands, like none of them really mechanically do anything like that you can't get kind of in the set, more or less. So like if you open it in limited or draft or whatever, like you can just draft it, play it in your deck. It's not a problem. It's not a big deal.
Mostly proxy it.
You may want
just
to
riffle shuffle that thing.
These are just to preface, these are going to be worth a ton of money, like a significant amount.
I mean, even like a rough, do you even like a gut hunch? I'm just curious.
I'm like multiple hundreds of dollars minimum for
that's kind of what they're pre-selling for now.
He's like the Polluted Delta, is that
here's the thing though, the rarity is slightly more common than a foil mythic, and in typically in a case of product you get a foil mythic.
So you might get one and then like a little shredded corner of another one?
Yeah, you'll probably get one per case, roughly.
Okay. About one per case. I think that's kind of where the rarity's at. So there's going to be a lot of these. Like,
well, a lot. Not, these are also like the most demanded cards for modern one. Like everybody needs 4 of these for, you know, whatever. So it's not like printing, you know, restricted cards from vintage, or printing a very specific multicolor spell like an Utter End or something like that, where like a very small class of people want these. These are like, if you play modern, you probably want all 40 fetch lands, all 40 shock lands. So like, even though there will be a lot of these, it's still going to be tough to acquire them, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, the desirability is going to come from building playsets.
Yeah,
I like these because if I open one, like I just get to use it in Commander. It's like great, like oh cool, just jam it in my box. I only need one. but what makes these stand out isn't that they're in here, because kind of there's always a feeling that when we go back to Zendikar, like what's the new treasures? Like there's this kind of this precedent with the community now that they have to live up to, which is why full art basic lands are back, even though that's a really powerful marketing tool, and kind of Mark Rosewater's talked about that before. Like he said, like why don't we do full art basic lands more often? Well, because they're really freaking sweet, and players love to buy packs just to get them. And so there's full art basic lands. There's a new cycle of dual lands. There's new man lands. There's Zendikar Expeditions.
There's only some man lands, which is probably part of your point, actually.
Yeah, there's all these things piled up on the set, and so. You know, obviously, you know, if you kind of come with, you know, I've never known Magic players to be negative about anything. Have you? So if you come looking at the set with an already negative mindset going, wow, there's all these really sweet things jammed in this set. What's going on? Why would they do that? Well, clearly it's because the set's not very good. You know, that's kind of one of the conclusions that people are one of the conclusions, I should say, people are drawing from having all of these kind of expected Zendikar-y things jammed all in that all into one set. So that's why that's part of why people talk about the expeditions as kind of gimmick in a derisive term. Like I think it's something sweet. Like they don't have to add extra stuff like that. Like you take that out of the set and it's like it's actually the same. It still has more cool things kind of shoved into the set than, you know, Dragons of Tarkir.
Yeah, like people are still going to buy it for the 3 sweet planeswalkers, all the dual lands, and the full art basics.
Yeah, it's already got great stuff. This is literal just bonus thrown on. We expect that.
I did like the almost complete surprise that we had with the initial buried treasures, though. I kind of liked that, you know, seeing these random posts on Twitter, people, oh my god, it's a Mock Tutor, and like, you're lying, you're a big liar. Like, this one, I feel like it got sort of...
I actually, not only that, but I kind of feel like they fucked these up. Like, just the way they look. If you like, so the way they are is basically they have text on the cards, and the text is in a text box, and the text box hovers over the art. Otherwise, the land is full art. So it kind of looks like a planeswalkery type of land. And I think, I don't know, I think that basically they screwed up. I'll actually find you a link to some mock full art ones that somebody did in the style of Unhinged lands. And they are like the most beautiful lands I've ever seen in my life. Like, I would pay $500 for these sunken ruins even. Like, they were absurd looking. And I don't know. I think that if you're gonna go out of your way to do these really cool, very, very rare lands that are clearly for collectors, high competitive players, and people that like to show off bling, then these are not for like casual Joe Schmo or whatever. He's just gonna open it and be excited to cash in. I think they should have just done textless completely. Everybody knows what a Shockland does. You don't need to print that on the card. Everybody knows what a Wooded Foothills does. You don't need to print that on the card. The new lands are probably the one exception there. Maybe put the text there because they're brand new. But I don't know. I would have liked actual full art lands the way they did the Unhinged lands, personally. I mean, if you're going to go out there and do this, just do it badass.
I mean, do you guys feel this is even a... I guess you kind of mentioned they're trying to get some more supply of the fetches out there. Do you think this is even a
this is not
a useful amount?
This
being
is pure for bonus. This is just okay. Gravy. So I completely disagree with Conley in terms of not having the text on the card. Like, I genuinely love when everyone's cards have all the rules text and it's all in the same language and we can all read it. I think the execution left a lot to be desired. Like, I would not have made the same choices the designers did. And very clearly, like, they were trying to evoke this very special Eldrazi type look with like the runic kind of thing that the Hedrons have. And
these are lands. Like, I kind of agree with the rules to the tech, like Texas Cryptic Command, I'm not a fan of, but these are all lands that have like very simple mechanics and they're used so often. Like, when's the last time that you've read an opponent's shock land of any variety or read an opponent's fetch land of any variety? You just know what those cards do because they're so iconic and so common. I agree with you.
Because you're a longtime competitive player. I think new players to Magic don't. Like, all the fetch lands actually have a really important trait. They don't tap for mana. You have to go use it with a fetch to go get mana, which is totally counterintuitive to any of the other lands that you see in Standard. Like there's that cycle of uncommon lands, right? And they all have abilities. Like, one's ability is like explosive vegetation at instant speed, but they all still tap for mana instead of just being this spell land ability.
But even then,
so there's little things that like that's why I like them, because like somebody's going to be tapping it, you know, for mana at a pre-release and like get nailed, you know, by some rules lawyer who's also super salty that he didn't open the Wooded Foothills, you know, and just ruin some player's day because like the rules text wasn't there for the player.
That's an issue with that person, not with the card person. But even if you're going to do the text, I think you should do it like they did with like Nissa's Chosen and stuff back in the day, where it's like on the art itself and not on a text bubble above it covering up. Like, some of these arts, if you look at the full, like people post on Twitter and stuff, just the actual art themselves that's being covered up, there's some beautiful stuff back there. Like, these are really, really well done lands in terms of like artistically. And you just have this like tannish, like sort of translucent text box covering it up. They're just kind of, I don't know, it kind of takes me out of it. Personally, but whatever.
Yeah, I and that's one of the big areas I would have improved on. I think that, you know, if they knew up front they wanted to do extended art for these cards, like I would have definitely put some direction in there that like the bottom third of the card, bottom third of the art needs to be darker or shaded or in shadow versus like the top two thirds. That way you can have, you know, the white text over top of it. Cause I think that's part of the problem. You look at some of the art, if you just put white text over it, you can only read half the text anyway. And so I think that there is, you know, there's some connectivity that could be going, like, let's make sure this art is going to be usable for a very, very simple, clean, minimalistic, you know, full art design, which I think what everybody would have loved more. And I think a lot of the backlash is if the art didn't have this like super Eldrazi, flavorful, evocative frame, it would feel like a really minimalist full art card, and I think people wouldn't have complained about it nearly as much.
Also, I would like it to be known that Adam requests that all basic lands get their text back on the card to teach new players what happens when you have a basic land.
And it should have every version of the tap symbol that's ever been used on a card, just so I don't get confused. I need my little sideways T.
And it needs to have reminder text of when you untap it, and it needs to use the untap symbol when you untap it.
Yeah, I mean, is that an instant or is it an interrupt?
You know what he's doing right now? He's pulling out Urza's Saga lands that actually have been written up. Yes, I knew it! I knew it! I knew it!
Part of me,
I just use these because they're my favorite promo.
I do agree with Adam though, because for me, when I think of basic land, it should still have the text that says "tap this for the mana." Part of me still is annoyed when I just see a mana symbol on the land.
So I'm trying to remember an article about that. I think it was Mark Rosewater, because what hasn't Mark Rosewater written about it at this point? Where somebody asked, like, "Hey, why isn't there what happened with tap, add whatever to your mana pool?" They've done a lot of research around that. Wizards spent a lot of years really trying to figure out, like, how do we get new players in the game? How do we get them to understand the game? How do we get them caught up to speed quickly? And one of the things they found was that tap to add. I think they said that it confused a lot of the players, and then just building it into the rules that this basic land, you just tap the land to do what you want with the spell, like, was actually just simpler, which is kind of an argument in Conley's favor. Like, once people grok what this does, you just do it. Like, you don't need the text there, you know, for every single land to tell you, like, tap it. Like, that's just what basic lands are in the game
for. The technical wording and the functionality are, like, very different. Like, trying to understand that, I mean, I know I personally would tap land werewolves back in the day to grab forests out of my deck and put them into play. And I wasn't playing with lands that had that text, but land werewolf had that text. Like, it just, to me, it made sense. It was like, add a green to your mana pool. Oh, my mana pool is down here. I'm going to go get a forest out for the year. Also, I came from Pokemon, where that was, like, you used resources and you added them and whatnot. So, yep. But if Llanowralf just said tap green or whatever and didn't say add green, like, I think I would probably just tap it for a green. I don't think I would necessarily go grab. Like, adding something to your mana pool is a very technical and gamey wording for somebody who doesn't understand games.
Okay, I guess, okay.
And to pivot off of that, one of the things that to make the basic lands work, because they technically don't work without the rules text, they baked into the rules of Magic itself the basic subtypes. Having the basic subtype on a land gives that land the ability to tap for mana. That's why you look at the shock lands, the can tap to add whatever colors is reminder text, because it's actually baked into the rules.
Because it's a land forest, or I mean, like, a forest plains or whatever it is.
Right. So that's why, like, giving, you know, Urborg, giving all of lands the swamp type, lets them tap for mana, just like making a land an island lets it tap for, you know, blue or whatever.
Wow, that's the most I've ever talked about having a tap symbol on a land versus not having a tap symbol on a land. I just missed the sideways T, because to me that is just how I learned. To me that always looks good.
So I want to do a quick shout out. Folks at home, if you have those old Arena promo lands that are from Urza's Saga or feature the Urza's Saga card frame and art, that old look, the forest that I flashed up, those are the basic lands I use for Commander, so I would love to take them off of your hands and put them in my delicious, delicious Commander decks. Those are my basics I need, so help me.
I might have a lot of those.
Ooh.
But it has to be, do you care about Black Border, or do you like
Black Border, naturally.
Well, it's the Arena League promo versions, where they're foil. So I have lots of Saga basics, and like I think I have a set that I use for in like a draft box. Like, when I go drafting, like, I've got my 10 of each or whatever to make decks from. But the foil promo versions from the Arena League, those
I
are the
no
ones
longer
that I
have
use.
Those. So yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I thought you just wanted normal Saga ones.
Yeah. These have to have the little star, the old school foil star going across.
Ooh,
them.
A little swooshy on there.
Remind everyone at home what they're looking for.
I missed the star.
I always got the now you know. In my mind, every time I saw one, I'd be like, doo-doo-doo.
This is what we need right here.
Oh, okay, so it's got this. Okay, little
swooshy.
It's got
the star at the bottom.
Well, actually,
nice
maybe I...
art. It has the Urza Saga set symbol. It's important to note that the set was not printed with foils.
I might
This is the last expansion set before foils.
I played a buttload of Arena, though.
Sixth edition came out, and that introduced foil... That didn't introduce foils to the game. It was Urza's Legacy, where premium foils first included.
I still miss my Arena. As a casual Joe Schmo player, Arena was perfect. Got me into stores, and I didn't have to worry about even like FNM level of competition. I just showed up and lost games, and then I got some cards. That made me pretty happy.
I think that's why people bring up the old players' rewards, because they could just grind out showing up to FNM to get foil cryptic commands, and that's what they miss, was just the show up and get free stuff instead of having to play it out.
Losing player rewards kind of sucked. That was one of my favorite things Magic did, because it always felt like you were part of a community. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I guess.
So here's the thing. How much do you think that player's reward cost Wizards to send you?
Oh, I'm sure it cost them quite a bit. But the thing is, they didn't replace it with anything. Like, if they had replaced it with digital rewards or, you know, something, but they literally just took it off the table. And like,
well, they tried. They expanded the gateway, like, the just show up and play Magic at Places promos. And it turns out when they tried to give good promos away there, like, people just, like, took the wholesale packs and started selling Path to Exiles on eBay and stuff. Like, it's so funny because they've tried over and over and over to provide, like, let's put cool foils in the hands of stores so players can just go play, show up, and get them. And, like, store owners or unscrupulous players, like, systematically abuse whatever system gets implemented as quickly as they possibly can, because that's just what unscrupulous people do. So, yeah.
I guess that's one reason why
I was there for that, and I worked in direct mail, so it was just, like, I was shocked when I started playing Magic again, and I'm, like, told they're going to mail me these cards, because, like, that was not a very cheap system. Not even remotely.
That's why I kind of missed the official Wizard stores that obviously do not exist anymore.
Yeah, and the thing is, you got, not only were you getting foil awesome cards, you were getting a bunch of full art crap cards you didn't want, and you'd get, like, 10 card packs. Like, I played in infinite tournaments, but I would get, you know, sometimes 20 promo cards in a single mailing, and, like, you know, if you ever ship Magic cards, like, that wrapped in a very tight packaging or whatever, along with, like, a letter explaining what happened. Oh, and you got a DCI card in most of those as well, so, because that was another feature, you'd get, like, a special DCI card the more you played, so you'd get, like, two or three new DCI cards a year, which is just absurd, and, yeah, it was quite the system. I mean, I definitely loved going and getting my mail. Like, even in college, I was still getting foil promos that I would, like, run down whenever because it would be, like, you wouldn't know exactly what day. It would be, like, a week of, like, checking your mailbox because you never knew exactly what you would get because it was a little random. Like, you knew you would get, like, guaranteed one or two of the big foils, but then it's, like, you know, Path to Exiles in there or whatever, and I want that really bad, or Lightning Bolt was one, and you just always cross your fingers. And then there was, like, one screwed-up mailing where they, like, sent me, like, 8 Wrath of Gods or something like crazy like that. I don't remember what it was, but I just got like a bunch of the foil or whatever, and was able to, like, turn around. They were like 40 or 50 bucks a piece. But those cards were worth quite a bit. They were not crappy rewards.
Yeah.
All right.
I missed my free arena cards. Yeah.
That's my nostalgia.
All right. We've been talking a lot about community stuff. There's actually two community news items that we have. One is going to be for Adam for the Community Cup.
Wait, is the second one that Buttcrack Guy is allowed to play Magic again?
Well, it's hard because he has to have a special chair. He has to be allowed to bring his own chair, like Kim.com in his court interviews has his own, like, special leather chair because his back hurts, which is just stupid.
I don't know. Okay.
But no, number two is the community forums at Wizards are going away, apparently due to lack of interest.
And all three people that cared are not listening to the podcast.
Yeah, no, I just had to point it out because there's something I never used either.
Less people care about the forums going down for Magic than listen to our podcast. True or false?
Ooh.
I don't know. That's a tough one. So here's the thing about the forums. The forums are the forums have kind of like a weird history with the Magic side of the Wizards brand. So the forums were originally tied to all of the like the daily MDG articles, and there was like a thread for every article, and, you know, there was like one thread that was just an on-running joke where nobody would let the thread drop, and I'm trying to remember all the little things, because there was a hot minute where when I was writing an article, like, I needed to check the forums, and, like, I could reply to people in there and get all that going. And then it wasn't that long. I think it was 2010 or 2011. They rebooted the forums and said, "All right, we're going to make these forums different." And what they did is they basically just layered in a whole bunch of social networking features. Like, you could make groups, and you could have like a personal like a personal blog and like wiki repository to contribute to. Like, that was a big deal with the Great Designer Search too, where like there was like a wiki where like people in the community contribute to wikis for the competitors to have help them have designs that they needed for submissions and things like that. The thing about that though is like it never felt like a good fit for Magic. You know, it's just like a strictly Magic player, because it's like, well, why do I need a wiki, blog, whatever? Like, I just need a thread about this deck, and like that's what everyone talks to. the whole forum system was actually designed for, I believe, designed better for the Dungeons & Dragons and role-playing side of Wizards brand. So like when you're running collaborative campaigns and you're creating complex character histories or intertwining worlds and kind of building all of these things together, those forum features are great. Like having like a blog to be able to like update your world to share with everyone every week is great. Like I think the Meadery this week announced that they're adding blogs, you know, like, okay.
I need to visit you know, that. Forbes literally, did it. It's in Minneapolis. I need to visit
you know,
there.
Like 6 years ago, like it's a very, very common feature. But for there, it was catered to like the groups where like you could publish things linked to the groups, so that way like only those people that were interested in collaborating could see that content. And there's a bunch of things going on with that. And so that system was super complex, super confusing, and it kind of alienated a lot of the forum users at the time, at least from what I put together, because the old forums just like vanished. So like all the old threads, all the old awesome stuff just kind of like evaporated. Like it was kind of an internet archive. I think there was like a snapshot that used to be up for a while. I don't know if it still is. And then at some point the articles weren't tied to the forums anymore. So like there wasn't any feedback mechanism happening that way.
And there wasn't a lot of new content going up to be talked about because basically somebody would have to just make a new forum topic, which is, you know, when there's not a lot of direction or whatever, you might as well just go to like MTG Salvation and do it there.
Yeah. So they're, you know, to say that the Wizards forums were dead, I think is wrong. Because any social community where there are people that get together, like, those stick around a while. Like, Gathering Magic has forums, and then there's a bunch of really great people that continue to use that to collaborate and talk together, and new users kind of trickle in, kind of as old users kind of trickle out, you know. It's not very big, not a very big setup, you know, but, like, I think, like, MTG Salvation still feels big, and they're kind of, like, the longest-running Magic-specific forum. Even though kind of, I think the Magic subreddits kind of exploded over that just because like, it's so easy to just hop in, from Reddit itself. So they're these online communities still have places. It's just much smaller. That was limited to the Wizard side. And I think that the upkeep and the maintenance and especially the security and anti-spam features, the phishing features, you know, you need to keep up with the technology that people would use to attack users and anywhere there's users, people would attack them. So I think shutting it down makes probably good financial sense. It's difficult to.
It's like being a Magic player in real life, just ready to be attacked at any time.
Also, there's just Facebook, right? Like, there's just, you just go on Facebook and join your local Magic community group. Like, there's one for Denver, there's one for Las Vegas. I think I'm in both. Like,
yeah. I just really worry about all of the content that's there that, like, somebody that played 2 years ago. Right, they put a bunch of cool D&D stuff up and it's just there, and like they checked out of the game or they're like deployed somewhere, and then they're gonna come back in like 2 months and like it's gone, just poof.
I'm sure
all of that work and content
somewhere. Right? I don't know. So, I hope it'll be archived somewhere, but yeah,
maybe. I don't know. It made it sound like that there weren't. Like basically, they want to, you know, officially retire the systems. You know, they don't want to have any maintenance or upkeep. It's just kind of like these go away. You know. community.wizards.whatever will just redirect to, you know, wizards.com, and that's that. I mean, that's what the announcement sounded like.
Yeah, it's going to be buried in the desert. No, they could use the hole where the ET cartridges were and then just kind of bore the digital bits into that.
Yeah.
So that's how it works on the internet.
There's enough ET cartridges to hold all the bits in the forum.
Yeah, they dug up a bunch. I have not watched that documentary yet, but apparently they did find the ET cartridges. The interesting part about that whole documentary is that this really wasn't a mystery. I mean, it was like when this happened, it was in the newspapers that they buried them in the desert. So, yeah. In general, it's a very unexciting documentary from what I got. Okay, Conley's asleep, so now we're safe to talk about the Community Cup.
Oh, okay.
Community Cup.
We won. Yay.
I got bad, except for that it remains true that every single community team has won the Community Cup.
That's not true. I was actually going to take a photo of the trophy because now it has little plaques, and each plaque has the winners and the winning score on it. And the one plaque is like Wizards team, and it's a bunch of Wizards folks. It's super weird.
Yeah,
it's not. Well, I mean the trophy is always there, so they can do whatever they want to that trophy. Yeah, so they clearly cheated.
They stole it and then changed the names.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably. Makes sense.
So one of them says Boner Jams now.
If I could slip boner jams on the cup, I probably would just read.
Yeah, or Turd Ferguson. That's the other one I want on there.
How long it's there, like, you know, when I visit, you know, in like 2 years, like, can I see the community cup?
I have a shrine at Wizards. Somebody made a little shrine of me that they keep on their desk.
Ooh, interesting.
I'm not sure if that's something to brag about or not, but
Kibler also has a shrine, to be fair.
Yeah.
He's an attractive man, though. Where is it in the women's bathroom? That's my
question. I would like to announce, now that Brian Kibler has been married and taken off of the Magic Bachelor eligibility chart, I would like to claim number one most eligible.
So Melissa's now been deleted because I had one entry on it.
Yeah, I would like to claim number one most eligible bachelor in the Magic community. Ladies, you can get at me via Twitter or Facebook.
Well, you can get at me whichever way you want.
Ship them. Sorry, I just had to take that moment.
And am I both married?
So we're talking about titles that people have won. That's what I've won recently. What have you won, Adam?
I was a member of the 2015 Community Cup team that defeated Wizards.
That's good. That's good work.
I got carried by my team. So this is my first chance to kind of talk about the event, and I'm going to be super honest, and I don't want anybody to kind of interpret anything as like overly negative. I didn't always have the best time at the Cup. And I know it's on me, right? Because like everyone else seemed to have like a super great time and seemed to like gel, and like whether they were winning or losing, they seemed like super upbeat or chipper about it.
It just hurt one side with those.
Oh well, spoiler alert for Asswatch 2015. You've made it almost to the hour mark. My ass is not necrosis.
You're not sitting like crooked.
I don't have any symptoms. There's no brown recluse spider bite. So I'm going to retire Asswatch 2015.
Does it smell of almonds when you change your underwear? Does it smell of almonds?
No.
What?
Games. Also, whatever fruity soap I happen to have.
Even if a spider, if a spider came running out of my anus.
And then his nose got necrosed as the spider bit him on his nose.
There's no reason to ever smell your underwear, Tom. Come on, what the hell is wrong?
But anyway, the cup was kind of challenging for me. I really didn't want to like let my teammates down. And by proxy, like the community, right? Like I don't want to feel like I'm dead weight, or like I have to like force my teammates to like outperform, you know, or perform way above kind of average. Because like winning games of Magic is difficult. Like a 60% win rate is like Pro Tour caliber. You know, if you're on the Pro Tour and you win 60
Pro Tour Hall of Fame caliber.
Yeah, like it's insane. Like most games of Magic, like, you know, if you look at the broad scheme of things, like if you're coin flipping every game of Magic, like, you're probably an okay player. And so for me, it was like, you know, I really, that's what I was looking for. Like, I just wanted to be able to support the team, to provide, you know, to not be that weight that forces, you know, somebody to 3-0 a draft in the last round, or somebody to the 3-0, you know, to, you know, more people than one or two of us, you know, 3-0 the stipulation draft to start off the day. Like pulling everyone down would be a disappointment for me. And that's what turned out, you know, and I don't think anybody blames me or looks at me and, you know, I this isn't a statement on anybody else. This is totally on me. But I really, really struggled because I couldn't provide what I wanted to for the team, which was just like win coin flips of Magic. Like I just wasn't able to do that. Like the stipulation draft went really well. I got murdered by the mono red deck because I was the cutesy twin deck. You know, Sam Stoddard had mono red burn. I had Splinter Twin and the modern
stipulation?
My stipulation was my deck had to be modern legal. Oh. So I had the Splinter Twin deck and he had mono red burn, slightly better.
What was his stipulation? Do you know?
Hmm?
What was his stipulation?
We were both the modern mage. Oh, both of our decks had modern legal.
Yeah. I see. This was two people pulled per stipulation or just per match?
The way the stipulations were is there are a set of eight in sealed envelopes. We chose an envelope at random. And some of the stipulations overlapped. Like one of the stipulations was you could only use cards A through L or M through Z, but they were split, right? So one person, like on our team, had M through Z, had A through L, and the other side had the other side. I think was how sure. It worked out. So like Aaron Forsythe had like M through Z like okay stuff. Like he wasn't very happy with his deck. I remember talking to him about it, but it was like, you know, there's a lot of stipulations that overlapped. And so, you know, we both had the same stipulation. I just had the cuter deck, so it didn't work out for me. Sure. But I went 2-1, and I was like, great. I'm okay with that. Like, I will 2-1 stuff all day because that's way above rate. Like, I can 1-2 sealed, and, like, I'm even on the day. That's great. I've done my work. And I proceed to sealed, and I open a literally unplayable pool. I rebuilt it every round. I had everyone on the team take a look at it and help me that had time to take a look at it and help me. Like, I had great blue processors, nothing to exile in the whole pool except for, like, 2 cards. I had like, some solid black allies, but, like, none of the white ones that actually make, like, black-white allies fearsome or fast or good. Didn't have good landfall dudes. You know, it was a very, very awkward pool to build with, as sometimes happens in Sealed. Like, that's part of the risk-reward of Sealed is, like, sometimes you just don't get a good pool to work with. And so, basically, like, in a normal pre-release, like, I probably would have played one round, looked at my friend's decks, and been like, yep, right, I'm going to go get pizza, maybe a beer, I'm going to come back and, like, try this again in 4 hours at the next pre-release. Just cut my losses and, you know, let other people have fun with better decks.
If you would have actually, like, done that, you would have been a legend at the Community Cup.
Well, right, like, that's the thing, is, like, I can't just, like,
later.
I can't drop, right? Like, I basically got to fight it out. And so I just had to subject myself to, like, getting just beaten every round, and it was never close. I was never really in any of the games I was in. I didn't win a single game in Sealed, at least that I remember. Maybe it's bad there, but...
Yeah, maybe you bragged on one of you.
You know, it was a challenge, and, like, I ended up the day, like, under 50%, and I'm like, great, other people have got a carry for me. Oh, by the way, most of the community ended under 50%, and, like, we had, like, a pretty significant deficit to make up. So, like, the end of day two, like, you know, lots of people were having fun. We went out to dinner, and everybody seemed to have a good time. And I'm just like, holy crap, like we're getting wrecked. And, like, there's, like, I got to do, you know, like, I got to do better.
In my mind, I feel like you just, I guess, yeah, mentally, it feels like I didn't realize this was actually, like, a serious competitive thing. I thought you just showed up and just, not. Whatever.
Well, yeah. For Adam, it is, because he doesn't play in serious competitive things very often. So it's
right. Like part of the reason I don't compete is because I feel this pressure to perform and, like, okay. You know, like I'm finally, you know, like, I'm finally used to it, like, with, like, the casual drafts and the competitive drafts that I do on the side and the kind of the coverage drafts. Like, I've kind of found my own. I kind of figured that out. But, like, this is, like, great. Like, if I just, like, if I don't help my team, like, I let them down. Oh, no,
if
by
you
the way,
the bed, no,
like,
one cares.
Like, well, speaking from personal experience as well, I felt a ton of pressure because I was, like, the standout pro, like, the most skilled player. So, like, I had a ton of pressure to, like, finalize everybody's decks, to finalize everybody's draft picks, to give everybody the okay. Like, everybody that had built a deck of any kind would come by me just last minute thing, like, let me know about this deck, which is, like, something that if I had infinite time, I would love to do. But when 10 people are, like, throwing a deck list in front of your face, like, you have a ton of pressure. Like, okay, I can't, like, let this person's deck suck. And then when you're watching people play out, like, some of the decks I worked on were 100% in isolation. I didn't, you know, I just handed a list to somebody at the end. And then you go over their shoulder and you see them, like, make a terrible play or not understand how the deck's supposed to work or whatever. And you're just kind of, like, biting, like, the inside of your mouth. Like, oh, this sucks. Like, I didn't explain it well enough. And, like, it's on me. So, like, I don't know. I definitely felt pressure playing it, probably for different reasons than Adam, but at the same time, like, it, while it's a casual thing, it is still a competition. Like, you still, nobody wants to walk out of there a loser. Not that we lost.
Having you now talking to two players from two different Community Cups with this, I guess, same feeling, feels like the Community Cup doesn't work. Like, it seems like something should be changed. Like, it doesn't sound...
It does work. Like, the thing is like, it's a personal thing. Like, I don't think people expected Conley to be perfect at that cup, but Conley wanted to deliver on the expectations that of the team. Like, he doesn't want to let his team down, and like that's exactly where I was at. So we go into day two, and there's the flavor thing, and like you know, I do some flavor stuff in Gathering Magic and Judge with Nate, and you know, I kind of know my way around the flavor of some cards. Like, I know some of the stories, and basically everybody on the team had like really strong ideas right away. It was like, we want to do this thing with Commander. We're going to choose that Commander and build around that deck. And like, I don't need to be there because like, you know, they've got Jimmy who knows Commander decks. Like, he has a podcast on Commander. Like, you've got two Commander experts. You don't need two Commander experts building a Commander deck. Like, you know, there's only enough room for like one person to really be a lead and pull that deck together. You know, so I kind of just ended up like I threw my pitch. Like, I know the story of Karabekh. I could do that. And it was like, no, we want to do this, like, you know, Miletus, like this blue deck. And I'm like, cool. You know, and so like they ran with that, and like that turned out really great. And like the you know, the appetizer deck, you know, like I thought that turned out fine. Like, I, you know, you know, I was working on dessert, and like we kind of hemmed around for a little bit while, and it was like totally, that's like this the totally like pick a card and build a deck around it flavorfully.
Fruitcake like, elemental.
And you have an hour. Like Conley, like have you ever just had somebody like pitch a card to you and be like, hey, take a card in Modern and build a reasonable coherent deck around it to try to battle people with.
So there was a game that Mike Flores invented called the Conley Woods game, and basically the Conley Woods game is somebody walks up to me and names three cards, and I have to on the spot come up with a deck that's Modern legal usually that incorporates those three cards. It's actually one of the things when I'm going to be starting. I guess I'll spoil this now. I'm going to be starting streaming once a week with the release of Battle for Zendikar on Magic Online, and one of the things I'm going to do every once in a while is going to be kind of a different way to do Iron Chef of Magic. That so the way that Nate does it is a flavor thing, right? But what I want to do basically is live build a deck like with an hour time limit, like basically have people vote on three cards or have somebody generate three cards randomly or choose three cards or whatever, and then using those three cards have an hour live on stream or whatever, or 2 hours or whatever it needs to be to make it fun. But basically you have to build with those three cards in mind, use a playset of each of those cards in your deck, and then take that through some gauntlets and have some fun with it. And different stipulations for what those cards could be, you know, there could be themes like they need to be all commons this week, or we need to play with all lands this week or whatever to make it fun. But just the idea of like, here's some cards that you were not expecting to build with, and I want to hear your train of thought and go. And I think that's kind of fun. So obviously, when it's a little different when you're doing that and you're on the spot playing a tournament for something that matters, which is basically what happens.
Yeah. So, like Kenji's like, I don't know flavor at all, and he just sits down and starts running like, you know, gatherer searches, you know, on stuff. And I had a chance to work with Kenji and Maria on dessert, and it was just, you know, Maria kind of bounced around a little bit and then like found like a gem in Hungry Spriggan. And, you know, we kind of brainstormed a little bit, and it's like, and I'm like, you know, like I'm trying to figure out like what can we do with a deck? And the thing is we just doubled down like all in, you know, total gimmicky, if you want to call it a gimmick, but we just went all in on let's make this deck like all about Hungry Spriggan.
I don't know what Hungry Spriggan does. I'm going to look it up.
It's a 3-drop, 2 and a green for a 1/1 with trample. When it attacks, it gets +3/+3 until end of turn. But basically, it's just all about how freaking hungry he is. Like, you read his flavor text, and he's just like, it just eats everything. Like, just
how many hippos were in the deck, then?
His flavor text is, if a Spriggan's eyes are larger than its stomach, it has ways to remedy the situation.
Yeah, will eat everything. So, like, we just made a deck about eating, like, all the hunger stuff, and we, you know, we really went deep on, like, the words and the different flavorful ways, like, Magic has kind of encapsulated, you know, eating and hunger, and...
You couldn't use unhinged cards, right?
No, not on hinge cards. Modern we're filtered on Modern legal. And so we kind of, you know, we went home with it. And it was like an all or nothing thing, right? Either the judges like it because like it's just so rich and deep on like we're just eating everything, or like they just don't buy it and we just get like totaled. And like, you know, it's high risk, high reward, and like we were risky. And Maria came up with a brilliant presentation to just like drive home just how hungry the whole thing was just by eating Doritos all the time while talking. And it worked out great. You know, I want to say that I feel like I maybe wouldn't have been as harsh on Wizards team, the Mirrodin, the two sides of Mirrodin deck. I think I had some issues with like the execution of it. But I think there are ways to kind of express that or do that. Like, they could have presented the deck a little bit better to show the transition, because I thought that was really kind of cool, their idea. But, it felt great. Like, that was, like, the one shining moment where I felt like I contributed, because it was just, like, I just encouraged, like, this madness, this descent into let's take what we have and just amp it up as big and loud as possible and just see what we can do with that. So I was super happy Maria led that and had a lot of really awesome ideas there and made that whole thing come together. And then I just went to the draft, of course, and just like 1-2. Like the only reason I won a round is the most Magic Online reason of all. So everyone can be thrilled. I played Worth Wolpert the last round. He flipped the wrong switch and made it so he didn't draw any creatures in game 3. That was it. Like I just
didn't play, Worth.
Didn't
oh,
play
God.
Magic. to decide, you know, winning a round.
Do you remember my Community Cup? My first, so we do our draft, and my first match against, it was somebody, maybe it's Billy Moreno, I don't know, it was somebody like that, and literally came down to timing out. And, like, it was, like, he's attacking me with, like, the lethal creature, but, like, couldn't finish the attack to where I could get blocks, like, in time and ran out of time. Like, Magic Online. Like, literally, this is being streamed, and they're, like, all hyping it up and, like, making a big deal out of the clock. And it was kind of lame that, like, a match came down to Magic Online timing out. But,
well, I mean, almost did for this year's Community Cup. So if you – I think the biggest – one of the biggest highlights – if you want to watch insane magic, just magic that just makes your head hurt and makes you smile at the same time, watch the commander decks face off, because basically it came down to like the last seconds. There's like 14 seconds left on the clock, and extra turns are being taken, and it's just absolutely insane to watch Yol like go into the tank. Because basically the situation is there's Sands of Time, basically says when something would untap, if something when your stuff untaps, anything that's untapped taps.
Yeah, it reverses.
Everything switches at the same time. So we've got Paradox Haze, which basically says we get two of those to happen. So anything that you tap during your turn ends up tapped after the second resolution of Sands of Time on your turn. So like you just end up locking yourself out. Which is a side effect of having you know the pirate deck acquire Sands of Time out of ours, and so Yol tanks for like 5 minutes. I mean, it was a long time. He just like kind of like put his head in his hands, and he just kind of like thinks, and he's like do this, and he's like scratching his head, and then like it clicks like what he needs to do to win, and it takes forever because like it was a very flavorful like we control time and like. Don't care about time, but you do because it's Magic Online. You have to win in 25 minutes of time taken in a game of Commander, so it's 40 life. So he had to deal twice the damage. Thankfully, only one game, but you know, it took him basically the time to get there, and it was just absolutely stupendous. Like watching him play around these insane effects and kind of figure out a way to push all of this damage through. You know, it was crazy. It was a really, really fun game to watch, and I was super happy with how that whole round turned out.
All right, so congrats to Adam for continuing the undefeated Community Cup.
Yeah, never community perfect score.
Community squad is undefeated, and that's what matters.
Yeah, and everybody who's watching this video is trying to figure out what in the world Conley keeps shoving in his mouth. It's driving me nuts. I don't.
It's not being shoved in my mouth. First of all, it's a chopstick.
It's a chopstick. To me, I thought you were trying to do like a Huckabee thing. You had like a piece of straw in there because you're an old country boy.
I never bit it. Just moving around.
I don't know. I've been watching it pretty intently for the last hour, but it's like a metronome, an oral metronome right now. I never thought I would say that in my life.
I think that's all we have for this week, right?
Yeah, we talked about Battle for Zendikar.
Yeah, gonorrhea. Oh, we'll talk about that.
Did you say gonorrhea?
Exactly.
Okay, first I got to call the CDC because I have to report all cases of gonorrhea, all sexual infections have to be reported. So first I'll have to report it, fill out this form, make me mad. Well, actually, it's gotten a lot better. Do you know that?
Well, I was about to ask
Colin if he's ever been tested for STIs. I figured that might be an inappropriate question.
I should not have brought up gonorrhea.
Yeah. Well, before you used to swab it, you had to do the actual swab up the urethra, but now there's actually a urine test that...
Speaking of Dance Watch 2015, because that's anything but gonorrhea, and that's what I'm going to talk about, I can walk, so that's good. That's where I'm at.
Okay.
Without a cane. I used a cane for like 10 days. That was embarrassing. Today I got a massage on my calf from a professional, and it hurt like hell. I was very close to crying. I was grabbing many things very tightly. It was not fun.
What kind of massage was this?
It was on my calf.
Oh. Okay.
It doesn't. If it was sexual, it was not very good.
A rub and tug or something like that.
No, what the hell is... what?
You never heard that term?
Rub and tug on the air. Why would I do that?
I don't know.
All right, exactly.
You're just a single guy. It doesn't matter.
What? It doesn't matter. So I'm not going to.
Adam Raya said it. Then yes, we're in deep doo doo multiple ways over Sunday. But
I think it's probably appropriate for no one to ever talk about their rub and tugs on the podcast. But that's just me.
That's not, well. I don't know if it's technically illegal or not. I was trying to say.
Oh yeah, I think it is illegal for most.
Is it okay? I didn't know if like maybe in Vegas or wherever.
At Vegas, it might not be, but I don't live in Vegas, so that's fine.
Well, I thought you said you're part of the Vegas Magic.
Can we talk about any? Connor get a rub and tugs.
Adam's getting scared. He looks like an okapi, like an African savanna.
I'm not leaving. I'm here.
Yep. Right. Any other Magic news to talk about? So pre-releases come up this weekend. When you listen to this, you probably have played your pre-releases. Hopefully you've had a fun time.
Check out my set review.
So when will that – does that go live? I mean, will that go live this weekend so people, when they listen to the podcast, it should be out?
Monday through Friday so when is Monday? Monday is like the 28th through the 2nd.
Cool. And that's on TCG Player for your kind of brewing set review.
Brew review.
Anything, I guess, Battle Printer related that would be new for Channel Fireball that people should watch out for?
Nope.
I'm not actually, if you told me that there was a secret, I forgot about it. Okay. It looked like you were evading a question. I wasn't sure why.
Yeah, there's nothing.
The date got changed once, but... So, Adam, how about for you?
I covered all of pretty much all of the cards that I'm super stoked about for Commander in this week's Command Tower. So, if you're reading, you're listening to this, it's the day of September 24th. That's the date that you're looking for that Command Tower article. Some of the lands are just absolutely bonkers. Like the land that has explosive vegetation built into it is just like. I went to pre-order my foils. I always pre-order just the foils I know that I really want for Commander, minus like Planeswalkers and some of the other things that I just always never really feel like I really need the foil that bad. Like, I'll wait. But I pre-order a bunch of foils, all the commons that I'm even remotely interested in at all for Cube, just that way I just have them, I can build with them. Like, most of them, you know, virtually all of them never make the cut, but I just have it if I need it. And the one land I couldn't pre-order in foil was Blighted Woodland. It was not available on CoolStuffInc.com like that night. Like, there were foil Planeswalkers, there were foil Mythics. Like, I got my Sire of Stagnation because that card's super obnoxious and going to be dumb in Commander. Like, I previewed him; he's going to be good, like real good. So I got all my preview cards, all the stuff that I always get. But not this just random uncommon, and like, I think it's just because it's just that good. Like, somebody else was like, yeah, I just want all these in foil because like, I think they're going to be worth a lot of money. It really reminds me of the common from the first Zendikar Expedition map. So I don't speculate on Magic cards, but this is a fun story. I saw it and I'm like, wow, that card's absolutely insane in Commander. It's a colorless Sylvan Scrying. Like, it's just colorless. I can put it in any deck and like get whatever land I need. Like, that seems super bonkers. So I ordered like the 5 foils or whatever that were available for 25 cents each. Foil Expedition maps, I think, sell for like 15-ish now. Like, I sold mine for 10, my extra ones.
Yeah, Urza's deck and the Bloom deck, they grabs the uses the bounce lands, they both run Expedition maps.
Yeah, so it's like good and constructed. It's great in Commander. Like, it's just one of those like super powerful cards. This one just gets basics, so I don't think it's going to have the constructed applications. Like, you can't.
But it's also land.
But it's land, and like any land, like, I mean, like, it, honestly, like, it's probably not that bad. Like, as like a one or two of in Valakut, because you can just like instant speed, just keep ramping.
I'm building a 5 color blighted deck that is like 50 lands with all, not the white blighted, but every other blighted isn't there. The white blighted is good, but it doesn't really work in a deck that doesn't have creatures. So,
yeah, like, I got the white blighted, like, it's going to be insane in my restack. Like, just, oh, cool, I can gain like 50 life for 4 mana before this wrath goes off. Like, okay. All of the effects, the only one I'm not super excited about is the red one, because it's just that old legendary land. Like, it's shock. Like, I get that it's super strong. Like, if you make it a lightning bolt, like, that land is just a bomb, probably in constructed and limited.
I think they could have made a deal 2 divided.
Yeah, like if it was forked, I think it'd still be very strong and constructed, but definitely situational, like a one of, like, probably just as good as it will be in limited. Like, you're going to get two X1s or like one X2, like it's about the same difference in limited when like you, when you're hitting six mana. Yeah.
But it would make a difference.
But yeah. So like I've got all the cards I talk about in the set or in that article. So I'm not going to rehash all of them. I'm going to try to work on my Pauper Cube update this weekend. I'm home for 2 weeks, not traveling. So anyone who's looking for Pauper Cube updates, I'll try to get it to you as soon as I can. Oh. Really want to play some.
It sounded like you were coming to that. As far as Dance Watch 2015 goes, this is an actual dance update. Decadence, the Colorado Decadence just got announced, which is the new year, 30th and the 31st of December. It's a giant show.
You went to that last year, right? You talked about Decadence?
That was like that was one of my first ones I kind of did for my birthday. But now I'm like a veteran of the scene. I've been around for a while, so I'm well more prepared for this one. And the lineups just got announced over the last 2 days. They're crazy, insane lineups, like the best, like all the websites are like Colorado's got the best. The best show by far on New Year's. Everybody should be there. So I'm extremely excited. And anybody that is people will be coming to this from all over the place. So anybody that is coming to Colorado, let me know if you play Magic. We can get together, do dinner, something like that.
Oh, I was actually going to tell you, this is nothing related to Decadence, but I actually will be in Colorado, Denver, Boulder area in November. So I might just try to hunt you down.
I might be – November is when GP Atlanta is, so I might be there if it's early in November, but I'm not sure.
Okay, I'll have to see. We're going to visit my sister, so okay. If you want to meet the brood again, there will be 5 girls. So, yeah, it'll be a lot of kids.
Okay.
And not to try to overshadow you, Conley, but I will also announce I'm going to probably the nation's best New Year's Eve party for toddlers, where you go at noon – and they drop a bunch of inflatable beach balls from the ceiling.
Oh, what drugs do the toddlers do?
They don't need any. They're already murdering each other for the inflatable balls.
Adam is right now having a nightmare.
Adam understands how vicious this can actually be.
No.
I've gotten to it for 3 years straight. It's pretty awesome.
That sounds insane, and this is why you are like super dad, and I'm like... just give me the mug and let me get out the door. Thanks.
Oh, it's great. Because a lot of times the kids don't know they're there. And then all of a sudden it's like raining beach balls. And
they don't know that they're on a planet with other people. Let alone
they're at a
special event for them.
As soon as that other alien that's by them takes the beach ball that they wanted, they realize they exist and that they must be destroyed.
Fair. Anyway, I think that's it for this week, guys, right?
Yeah, so what I want to say is, since people will be listening to this probably next Wednesday, so again, after your pre-release weekend, I love getting emails, so this is my usual weekly email begging for. So it's MTG, think about it for a second, mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com. Send us stories about your pre-releases. Do you like the set? Do you not like the set? You know, cool plays. This is something we used to do at Monday Night Magic all the time, where we used to get a boatload of emails right after a pre-release, and it was always fun to read the stories.
Do you have any additional Magic conspiracies you want to tell us about?
None that I'm willing to share yet.
Not you. Who are the people that are...
Oh, other people out there.
Yes.
Yes, I'm assuming the answer is yes.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You can bet your conspiracies, then Tom and Adam will just eat them up.
Mm-hmm. I'm all about conspiracies.
Yeah, I can't get my V-neck to be as big as Conley's.
Okay, I was kind of wondering.
I tried.
I do appreciate the product placement there, Adam. It's
I had some polos made up for the Community Cup. Like, I didn't have like nice Gather Magic.
Oh, because you didn't have those before. I saw pictures of you wearing I didn't realize it was a made for this. That's cool.
Yeah, well, I needed polos. Like, I needed like a professional like meeting shirt to wear, so I had them made, and you know, Rich Castle, our video director for YouTube, you know, our videographer behind Inside the Deck, really awesome guy. He needed some, so he got them made, and he didn't want as many as I did. I wanted 3, he wanted 2. So we took one of the bonus large ones that we had made up, and gave it to Kenji Ikashira, and he was happy to wear it for a day for us while we were hanging out battling people on Saturday. So props. Props to Kenji and everyone else on the team again. Definitely Kenji for I think Kenji for being in very similar shoes to you, Conley, because everyone wanted to ask Kenji everything.
Sure. I'm sure that him and Joel got a lot of
Gabe too.
Sure. Yeah.
Our talented players definitely had their time stretched many ways. So
do we have a Twitter account?
We do. I was about to get through all of our contact info. We, obviously, again, email address, mtgpopery@gatheringmagic.com. We do have a Twitter address or account. I don't know what the correct nomenclature is for a Twitter handle.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
It's the at symbol, at mtgpopery.
@ @mtgpopery. Usually, Adam actually every once in a while will do something. It is primarily me. If you could not guess, as the voice of our MTG Popery Twitter account. I also have my own personal Twitter handle. God damn, I hate the word handle. My own Twitter identifying name, which is @PSGReader. I don't write anything about magic anywhere. I used to do a podcast. Now I do this podcast. And this weekend I'm going to this really cool park in Stillwater, Minnesota that has huge, enormous teddy bears in it. And I'm going to watch my kids go nuts. And we also officially have sent the invites for our pony birthday party for our going to be 4-year-old.
I really hope that you're just secretly the Truman Show and there's just a camera crew following you around everywhere and you don't know.
Why is that?
Because everything you say just sounds so lame and then you do it anyway. And then
it's awesome.
I know. You're
watching
so
a 4-year-old lose it, just like,
you're so happy.
Ponies! And then like, did you know you get to ride that pony, Amelia? Ah! You know what's after that? A hayride and pizza.
I can get pizza.
Small heart attack happens. They recover because, you know, their hearts are so young and pliable, and then they get on the pony.
All right, Adam, do you or the brown recluse living in your ass have it?
I do. My Twitter handle is @the_Stibs, STYBS. I feel like I should have had my Community Cup team name changed to CC_the_Stibs instead of just Stibs, but it's all the same. I write for GatheringMagic.com, content manager, person, dealy. I do Command Tower, the commander column, every Thursday on MagicTheGathering.com, the official Magic the Gathering website. I'll be home the next couple weeks, but I will be at Grand Prix Madison, then Pro Tour Battle for Zendikar in beautiful Milwaukee. I'm actually very excited to go there, unlike probably everyone else. I don't know why. It's a great little place, I think, that we're going to be at.
I think it's in October.
It's Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'm looking for the fall. Looking forward to the fall weather.
Algonquin, like a
Pro Tour that does not incinerate. Sounds lovely. And then Grand Prix Quebec City the weekend after that. Just like boom, 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 boom. I'll be there. So
said it with the correct Quebec.
Yeah, no, I'm not actually being mean. So now that I know I've made Bruce Richard mad, how what's the correct way to say? I would have said Richard. That's what I said, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but is it Quebec or Quebec?
Quebec, like K-A-B-E-K.
Quebecois.
Yeah, Quebecois is the language, which is not quite French, but has like French within
it. It's French, but like, Franglish. Last time I slid into geography, the Texans came out in force and threatened to like alternatively serve me the best barbecue of my life.
So without getting into geography, basically it's as American English is to proper English. Like it's kind of like that. Whoa. So it's French, but it's changed to kind of a
dialect of French, yeah. I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a great stretch across October, getting to see a lot of events and a lot of people. And then I'll work out of sunny Florida for a week. So I go from Canada to Florida all in the same day. Be a good time. Yeah.
Those are basically the same place.
Mm-hmm. Not even remotely similar at all.
lots of old white people. Yes, it is. Yep.
Where can I yell at you on the internet?
You can yell at me at nobody really yells at me. It's mostly just Tom pestering me about stupid stuff, and then people replying to Tom's stupid pestering.
What did have I done something recently? I don't remember.
No, but every time you do reply to anything of me, I just consider it pestering because it's stupid.
It's like, as you use some sort of bizarre jargon, it's like this, you're not even talking boards anymore.
You, the other day you just said, oh, I'm just looking at your byline. When are you a weekend
enthusiast? Oh, yeah. It's funny because you said for years you think I said you are a weekend enthusiast.
Yeah, it's like what? A cool thing to put in my byline, okay? Because bylines are stupid and it sounded clever, so I put it there. Anyway,
I want to know what you're
can be found @Conley81 on Twitter. I do not use the MTG Popery Twitter account.
17 enthusiasms.
Check out my pre-release brew review next week on TCGPlayer.com. And streaming coming to a Twitch near you. I'll let you know when that officially kicks off, but it will not be until the new cards hit Magic Online, because doing any type of constructed anything on Magic Online right now is kind of lame because it's a very dead format. But
Okay. Is this, I mean, are you planning to have this be a pretty, like, set schedule? Like, hey, like, you always check me out, like, Wednesday at X hour or something like that, or?
Sunday nights is what I'm aiming for, because I did some polling, and people said that that is one of the down times for Magic. There's not a lot of streamers then. Oh. And basically, the only entertainment that happens is the top eights of things, and usually that's over in the afternoon. So the Sunday night availability is there, so I'm going to be looking to do Sunday nights. I don't know exactly how long or whatever, but I'm trying to get this out there, to commit to it, because my streaming committing has not been the best, but I have a little bit of free time these days, and I'm not really traveling to a ton of tournaments, so I'd like to still kind of have my foot in the Magic community one way or another, and watching people like Kenji or whatever be very successful at it kind of inspires me to get out there and just have some fun and communicate with people. And,
yeah. Cool. Do you have like a fancy name or like a catchy name for your big boats? I don't know, something like that.
Stream is just commonly, everyone's going to know my name. They don't need to play.
Do you have like a name for your stream? Like, oh, you know, this is, you know, Bad Brews with the bad boy, Conley Woods.
No, if I had a theme or something, I don't think I'm going to have a theme. I think it's just going to be Conley Streaming. Go check out Conley Stream.
Okay. Or maybe like, you could do something cool like your environment, like shirts, no shirt, creative body shaving. Do you have enough body hair that you could directly shave designs?
The podcast better end quickly or this shirt's coming all the way off.
Okay, so I'm going to start filibustering. So for the pony party, we are inviting all 16 kids from the immediate class at her daycare, including the four kids that are her best friends that graduated up to pre-K.
I only have like one or two buttons left.
Mm-hmm. I could tell you about the hats that we ordered. There are 16 of the hats. There is some have a red thing around it. I guess the brim of the cowboy hat, blue trim, because boys and girls. Apparently at Target, though, I'm not supposed to say this is for a boy or a girl. I have to say this is for a child. Choose what you want. All right. Thank you for joining. We are almost done.
If you live through that 10 seconds, I applaud you.
Golf clap it. Oh, no. We were doing all types of new claps at dinner today. There's that clap. My personal favorite is the windmill clap. I made that one up.
Dear God, where are we going?
I like the round of applause.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Claps around the world. You don't realize you're on a dad cast.
We're well beyond the Magic. Good night, everybody.
Good night. I enjoy it. I'm going to hit stop recording.
What just happened?
Creative clapping. You know, like you said, you create new dances.
I
create new claps.
5 years older by osmosis.
Don't judge how I express myself, damn it.
By osmosis. I grew 5 years in one podcast. Yeah. Why?
Creative clapping. It'd be hard to clap with a cane. I'm actually still recording.